is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Welcoming my colleague Gregory Copley of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We revisit the Nigerian election just passed, where the ruling party won the election, we're told, repeatedly won the election, we're told, despite the challenges of two major candidates. However, in a new article that I follow very carefully from Foreign Affairs by Ebenezer Obadari, a Douglas Dillon Senior Fellow for Africa Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, I learned that what we're witnessing in Nigeria, the unhappiness after this election won by the ruling party, is two parts. One, the older generation that remembers the corruption of regimes of the 20th century and is proud of the democracy, and the younger generation, not proud of the democracy, impatient to the point of despair at all the promises that have not been acted upon. Gregory, you know Nigeria very well, and we spoke of it at the time, and also the disappointment that the ruling party was successful despite having not shown much in the way of accomplishment these last years. Tinubu is now the new president, and the complaining parties here are saying there was a corruption or some kind of funny business with the election. What about this argument that the new generation is impatient? That would be the generation that you identified as associated with the candidate, the younger candidate, Peter Obi. Good evening to you, Gregory.
Good evening, John. Well, I would be surprised if everybody in Nigeria is not impatient for democracy to actually begin. It's been hijacked and sidetracked for so many years since independence in 1960 that it's now becoming a tragic and unfortunately, about to have very, very serious ramifications. It's interesting that the election is being contested against the victory claimed by former Lagos Governor Tinubu, because there was no question that there was malfeasance involved. There were all manner of irregularities. The two opposing candidates, Atiku Abubakar and Peter Obi, have in fact filed lawsuits to challenge some of the outcomes. But those hearings are just beginning now, and the new government is due to take office within literally days from now as well. So it's going to be incredibly disruptive. And the reality is that almost certainly the courts cannot, for fear of causing major chaos, cannot stop the swearing in of Governor Tinubu as president. And he is, by the way, a candidate who and a president-elect who is showing grave signs of age-related cognizance and health, really serious aspects of that. And this was evident during the election campaign, which is why he didn't speak very much. So you've got this situation where the court hearing is going to come up, and if it doesn't admit that there were mistakes in the election process, then the public will become very dissatisfied, and in particular that youth group, which supports Peter Obi, but also supported Atiku. In any event, what's happening now is that as the present government of President Buhari leaves office, he leaves the worst financial an economic situation that the country has ever faced. The country is in debt massively. There's been enormous corruption and theft of public exchequer. And the country now is in very poor shape. Traditionally, Nigerians have been able to get along by ignoring the government, going about their business, buying, selling, trading, whatever, and ignoring the government. Now, however, the situation is critical because the outgoing government not only stole a lot of the money, misused even more of it, incurred debts which the country cannot pay, but also by changing the currency itself and calling in old currency has left Nigeria in a grave shortage of actual physical currency. Now, this is a country which has basically got a cash economy. So you're not dealing with so much with credit cards, as that's starting to come in, or credit-based acquisitions. It is a cash-based economy, and there is no cash. So people are being frustrated. They are not able to buy food in many instances or pay their bills. So the consequences are dire, and you couple that with the very justified belief that the election was hijacked, and this is a recipe for disaster. It's interesting to compare the elections to the House of Representatives and the Senate and the gubernatorial elections, which occurred all around the same time. They all went ahead very smoothly. It was only the presidential elections where we saw all these signs of rigging and malfeasance. So there is going to be a backlash to this. And at best, what we will see is Nigeria, the largest economy in Africa, largest population in Africa, is going to be under extreme stress and discomfort to the point where we will almost certainly see separatists,
right,
movements arising again in Biafra and so on.
I'm glad you mentioned separatism because the article in Foreign Affairs by Mr. Obadare mentions the possibility of three main ethnic groups going to secessionist extremes: Yoruba, the Hausa Fulani, and the Igbo. So, does that describe the north, the south, and the center of the country? What does that describe? But what would it look like if it was going to break up?
Well, yes, there are definitely tendencies to move along the lines that you suggested, the Yoruba, which is around Lagos and extending further, and that's mixed between Christian and Muslims. It's not a Muslim Christian divide. You look at the Hausa and the Fulani people, who are not entirely compatible necessarily, but they're 99% Muslim, and the Igbo, the people who basically fought for secession once before under the name of Biafra, and the Igbo people, they're substantially a Christian and animist people, and in a lot of the oil areas. But there are so many divisions down to which the country could break. There are a lot of very, very distinct ancient kingdoms there, which have thousands of years of tradition, including particularly the Benin kingdoms and so on, where, by the way, a lot of those kingdoms made their economic wealth through wars to capture slaves, which were then sold up into Arabia and over in the old days to the Americas and Europe. This is the source of the slave trade and the people who literally built their economies on the slave trade. And they are potentially ready to carve out a separate identity once again.
What you and Mr. Obadare are describing is a country that is under extreme, extreme risk of breaking apart. And it does not seem credible that Tinubu is the man to lead such a country because of his health challenges. Does that mean the army is standing behind this in order to organize the state? Who could hold the state together if Tinubu is not healthy enough to do it?
Well, when you get to countries of such incredible cultural, linguistic, and religious diversity coming out of the creation of the so-called modern states in Africa and South Asia and so on, what you do get is the reality that there are generally only two major groups which can be called national groups. One is the civil service and the other is the military. People complain that the military always feels obliged in countries like Pakistan or Bangladesh or the African former British and French and Belgian colonies. The military seems to step in to take over. And they do so because they're the only ones who really feel themselves to be nationalists. And it's interesting that they also produce some of the greatest minds and the most altruistic minds in countries like Nigeria. And this generation, this altruistic generation, is passing. Just last week, on May the 18th, actually, we saw one of the great strategic intellects of Africa, one of the greatest intelligence and defense chiefs that they've seen in the last century, Lieutenant General Aliyu Muhammad, just turned 80. And he's still vigorous and active in trying to promote democracy and honest elections. and has fought against corruption in government all of his career. He started graduating from the Nigerian Military Academy in time to go and fight for the unity of the country against the Igbo insurrection to create Biafra, because he believed, like a lot of his generation, that they'd been given a great gift of welding all of these ancient kingdoms together to create a modern state in Nigeria, one which had enormous population, enormous resources, and therefore enormous prospects. They're the ones who persist. As you say, they're proud of their democracy. They're not proud of what it has done, but they're proud of the fact that it exists and has the potential to do things. And so we still see people like General Ali Muhammad Gusau fighting to hold the country together. But he is fighting against the mindlessness of the modern generation, which doesn't want to know about history. It just knows that something's wrong and they're rebelling against it. He's trying to, if you like, channel people through an educated view of their country. And it's in many ways inspiring to outsiders to see some of these people fighting so desperately for values which we in the West not only have taken for granted, but have actually let atrophy and wither on the vine in Western countries.
Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're headed to Australia. I'm John Batchelor.